Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this regular weekly, it used to be bi-weekly, now it's weekly call with a SaaS expert. My name is Natalie, and I'd like to welcome my special guest today, Sarah Hatter. Sarah is the founder and CEO of CoSupport, a company that has helped over 200 companies create excellent customer support experiences since 2011. She's also the organizer of the Elevate CX conference and the best-selling author of the Customer Support Handbook. Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to share your expertise with the SaaS Boss community.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm stoked. This is, I think I told you multiple times if we talked about doing this together, this is my favorite audience. Bootstrap SaaS founders. It's like my people. So I love being here. Thanks for having me. And congratulations to you for being able to do this weekly and have this engaged community. That's a big feat, I think, these days in 2020 to be able to be that consistent.
Thanks. Well, to frame the conversation, help listeners understand where they are and how big is the support problem for them. For example, for my husband, you know, we have a SaaS, right? So for my husband, first he was just by himself. Then we hired one support person. Now we are hiring a second support person.
Right.
So it looks like it's never gonna get there. So
yeah. And you know, typically the people that I start working with are in that growth stage. Maybe they're 18 months into a product that they've put all their money and time into. Usually when they come to me, it's out of this desperation for what do I do next? And it's an incredibly typical scenario. Let's just put it in a framework, if you will. Incredibly typical for founders, SaaS founders, bootstrap SaaS founders to be doing support by themselves. We were giving a lot of advice about that, you know, in 2008, 2009, and we all listened to it. But what that ended up doing is really undermining the idea of a support professional. Now, I will say, granted, in 2010, even, the idea of someone coming in and doing customer support full-time as a career versus, you know, an internship or a step up to product or someone who was like going to be there for 6 months or so and then move on, I think that was still, kind of out there in the ether. Like it wasn't really a real thing. It is a real thing now. People who want to actually be working in support, answering customer emails as a career. I know this because we've built an entire community of CX leaders, you know, 1,500 people strong. That's what they do. So we are in a really, really good time if you are building a SaaS company to stop thinking that you have to have all of this on your shoulders and be in control of it. There are people out there that do it really, really well. Just like you are eventually going to need to hire a product person. Eventually, you're going to need to hire in a marketer. Eventually, you're going to need to hire in someone who's going to clean up your code and do a little bit better job there. You have to think about support in the same way. And contextually, I think the great thing, again, about where we are in the world right now is there are so many people who've spent the last 10 years working in these startups, learning from mistakes, making all of the mistakes themselves. They now have a lot of wisdom experience. So I'm no longer the only person out there preaching this stuff, which is great. I was getting very tired, especially traveling around the world. So it's awesome to see that there's so many people out there now who have the knowledge and wisdom that I have, the passion I have for it. So being in that place where you're like right around the corner, I've got to hire someone else. It's going to drive me crazy if I don't hire someone else to do support. That's the place where most of the time people who come to me for help, that's where they are.
When you start working with SaaS company, where do you see the lowest hanging fruit is? Can I give us a framework?
Easy. Knowledge base. Easy. It's the one thing that people put off. They store all this information in their brains and in Slack channels and in, you know, commits and like all this stuff that they have there. Even in, you know, release notes that you're putting into the App Store, you're putting more information into that than you are actually documenting how a product works, feature sets, etc. So my goal when I come into any situation where someone is drowning in a customer support or customer experience world is, what can we do to eliminate customer support? What can we do? That's the goal. You want to have educated, thoughtful, knowledgeable customers, people who can solve their own problems, can investigate what's happening and find a solution from the documentation you've given them. But you can't have that unless you've invested in the documentation and the knowledge. So that's the big place that we see a lot of companies really failing, is that they're not investing the time to put the knowledge out there. Every help desk now, Intercom, Zendesk, Help Scout, whatever you're using, has beautiful knowledge bases built in. Out of the box, fill them in, they'll do all the work for you with predictive searching, that great big giant search box. You can have ratings put in. You can actually go on your back end and see what are people searching for and are they getting the answers they want. If you do not have that kind of investment, if you haven't gone into that, you are only going to get emails, chats, and phone calls. That's it. So there's not really a huge in-between about, well, maybe we'll just put like a 20 question FAQ up and then we'll deal with whatever comes in. That's terrible practice. It's a really, really, really bad habit. So the first thing that you should do when you're thinking about bringing in someone else to do this customer support professionally for you, that step up from where you've been, is getting all that information, all that knowledge, and putting it somewhere accessible for all of your customers. Then you can kind of gatekeep who gets to the inbox, who's getting through chat. Anything that's, you know, reset my password, app's not refreshing, that stuff should be really, like, tier one support should be completely handled without a human being involved, so that you have the time and you have the energy and that time resource, again, to really focus on those bugs, issues, refund requests, all those things that really need a lot of attention. So that is like my number one thing. The other thing too to remember is that if you do not have resources right now, if you're still going to continue to do customer support, but you know that documentation is something that you need to be investing in and focusing in, you can outsource that. There are several companies that work, you know, we were one of them for a really long time, that we wrote documentation for other companies. So think about that as an option, as a resource for you, but don't put it off anymore. Every time you get an email that is an email that you have answered or a question you have answered more than once, there's a reason for that, and it's because you've really lacked putting that answer out there where someone can find it and answer the question themselves.
What I was really surprised to find, one founder that I worked with, their product documentation was bringing in more leads and trials than all of their blog posts combined.
Yes.
Even so though their product documentation didn't even have call to action, and blog posts had call to action.
I know, so it's surprising. It's surprising, and I see this a lot too. I was working with a company this recently, the awesome, awesome company, but I was going through doing an audit for them in support, and I went through the motions as if I was a customer trying to get support on something. I went to their website. I looked all over for the help link. I found it in the bottom, this big at the lower right-hand corner in a very light gray font. You know, I was able to, you know, click it and then I get to this thing. I went through this whole process. So it was a funky, broken process. And I showed the co-founder and she said, I never would have thought that a customer would have gone to our website to get help. Because she's thinking they're logged in, they're going to click the link and, you know, in the app, or they're going to have a different way to access them that they've trained them on through onboarding. And it's like, you have to remember that everything that you produce about your company and your product has to do with marketing, and that includes customer support. If I'm thinking about spending $500 a month annually, I have to pay upfront for a product that you're building, I'm going to cover all of my bases. And one of those things is this something I can learn how to do? Is this complicated? Is this like scary and techie? I'm going to go to your support site or your whatever you have on your website that shows, you know, knowledge-based documentation, and I'm going to skim through that. And if I see screenshots and videos, and if I see that you do monthly or weekly onboarding classes to help answer questions live for people, if I see that you've got beautifully organized categories, and I can start searching for things. How do I cancel? That's the number one thing that people search when they're, after they go to a pricing page, looking, you know, researching an app to use. if that stuff is there, you're going to become a trusted resource to me. I'm going to feel like this is a legit practice. They really have invested in their customers. They really invested in, you know, maintaining their knowledge base for current and future customers. So you're right. It can be hugely convertible for a lot of people. And it's not something that I find most SaaS founders are even thinking about when they're in that, you know, 6, 12, 18 month period of growth. They're really just thinking about getting something to market and testing it and, you know, iterating.
The next question that I get from a lot of founders is, how do I get people to use this knowledge base?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's much easier to hop on a chat or like submit a ticket request,
yes.
Right?
Right. And this is a sticky situation for some people because a lot of us as founders, when we're still handling a lot of the customer support, there's two camps. There's the one that's the send me an email. So here's my phone number. Call me, follow me on Twitter. I'm going to answer all your questions. I swear. I'm like, you guys do want to talk to me, right? There's that camp. And then there's the camp that's like, they kind of don't want to talk to customers and they kind of put it off and they figure like, let's just like hide our phone number and not publish it. Or let's hide, make the contact form like really specific. And that turns a lot of people off. I think the middle ground is have a lot of knowledge resource out there that you can gatekeep your contact form. Again, getting back to where we are in the world, the best thing about living in the future of 2020 is the fact that all these things we used to have to build ourselves back in 2010, 2015, they're now standard features in a lot of these help desk knowledge-based programs. So when I talked earlier about having a knowledge base that has predictive searching, where if I type in cancel, it's going to bring up the list of things that are either tagged with that or have similar resources in that article. So when I'm a customer and I'm trying to get support, I'm going to go to your contact form. Ideally, this contact form is going to have lots of dropdowns for me to self-categorize. It's going to have an area for me to type in what is my problem about, and it's going to start matching that towards documented resources. And before I can hit rage click send, right? I want to talk to support. It's going to say, well, hold up a second. Does this answer your question? Those people who are like, I want to be talked to. I want to, you know, they're very, very vocal about wanting to be in charge and be in control and on the front lines of support. Some people find that that's too much gatekeeping. But from a customer experience, the reality is customers don't want to talk to you when they have a problem. They don't want to chat with you. They don't want to email with you and like wait for your reply, go back and forth. They just want the answer. People are more apt to talk to you during onboarding or sales because they want to know that they're making a good investment. They want to know that they can learn how to use a product and stick with it. Right? Long-term. That's the other thing to remember is that people don't want to cycle out and churn out of products. They want to stay where they are. The best way to keep them where they are is to answer their questions, give them knowledge and education proactively. Make sure that they know that you've invested in this again, that they can find the answers. Because once they find their own answer, once they don't have to send that email because the link that came up is actually answering the question, they're going to know, next time, I'm just going to go straight to the knowledge base. Or next time, I'm going to go to the video library versus trying immediately to get through to chat. The other thing too is chat is such a headache for everyone involved. It is a massive headache. It's a massive undertaking. Make sure that you're also gatekeeping that with those knowledge resources. So if someone has to wait for you because, you know, you need to be pinged and then you need to get on live chat while they're waiting for you, they actually have resources that they can start scrolling through and hopefully find those answers. So you're going to hear this. I'm going to sound like a broken record. It's all going to come back to documentation because that educates users. That's how users get engaged with your product. That's how they feel empowered in your product. That's how they remain loyal customers, solving their own problems and eliminating that need for support.
What are some results that we can expect from all of our efforts here? So number one is decrease in the volume of tickets, right?
Hugely, hugely, yeah.
Number two is increase in customer retention.
I would say so. If you are running a product that has great documentation and, you know, remember the Zappos thing? Surprise and delight. The best way you could surprise and delight someone right now, these days, is, like I said, eliminating that need for them to wait for an answer. And do it in a way that's like fast and friendly. And the language that you use in your documentation doesn't have to be dry and robotic. It can mimic that persona of, you know, an engaged human being who's wanting to help you. The best way and the fastest way, I think, to really surprise and delight people is just in that scenario we talked about. I have a problem. I need a solution. And within minutes or seconds, I find the solution on your website. I don't have a problem anymore. That is such a better scenario than I have a problem. I fill out a contact form. I send an email. I get the confirmation that you got the email. And then I wait on it. And then, you know, the next day I get the reply and I have to go back into what I was doing. People want immediacy and they want solutions. And they want to say, I hate this word empowered, but it does mean something very explicitly when we talk about customers. What that means is that they're in charge of what they're doing. They have confidence in your product. They have confidence in the experience that they're having with your company and your product. So anything that you can do to give them more and more and more knowledge and empowerment off the bat is hugely essential to their longevity as a customer. Best customer is the customer who never has to write customer support, right? I think on average, what you're looking at over time is always going to be about 10% of your active paid customers are going to contact support for some reason. 20% is what most people are seeing. And then the worst part about that is how many of those are repeat callers to your support inbox. Those are pain points that can be really easily eliminated through education. So on top of like having your great documentation, having education, being proactive about it, this is where it gets into that point of like, as a founder, you need to start putting this stuff on somebody else's shoulders. You can't be doing it all because it will really drain you of your energy and drain you of your enthusiasm if all you're doing is trying to keep up with your inbox or your chats or all this other proactive measures. So find somebody who really wants to be in this position and wants to do it well. And then you can kind of take back, okay, maybe I'm going to do onboarding. Maybe I'm going to do office hours every week as a founder. I'm still very engaged with my customers, but it's in a less structured way, right? And I don't have to be like writing knowledge base articles and answering emails and all that stuff. I know it sounds weird to be like, I'm a customer support expert and I focus on eliminating, but the reality is, that's what we want. We don't want people writing us complaints and you know, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't do anybody that much good. The data mining that we can get from customers has to do with those happy, loyal customers that are with us long-term. And we're not going to get to them if we're just sending constant emails about resetting passwords, right?
You mentioned office hours or like webinar a few times. We actually started doing this a few months ago and we really enjoyed the results of it. Now we basically can multiple birds with the same stone. I'll give you an example. So yeah. We actually can record the meeting, right? And then like cut the clips that specifically yes. answer like some people's questions and add that to the documentation page, for example. And then you can add it to so many other places, right? Besides just the fact that people are so happy that at least once a week they will be able to talk to you. If I am able to get on the phone with you at least once a week, this puts you on a completely different level with every other SaaS company. What are some other byproducts or some other best practices that you've seen companies implement a weekly session like this?
Well, I think the weekly sessions are killer. I mean, honestly, you're right. It sets you above and beyond other brands. MemberMouse is one of my favorite companies right now doing this. Their CEO has kind of had a reckoning with himself about his role in the company. And he realized, you know, I've hired the best people. They're doing a great job. So maybe my role really is just to be more of an engaging face for customers. And that's what he does. He does office hours. He has a podcast. He's like, that's his deal. And it's amazing because, you know, they supplement awesome documentation, awesome customer experience with this very one-on-one intimate feeling that you can have as a customer. So a couple ways that you can do this. You can have invite-only weekly onboarding classes. Onboarding is a weird word, but you want to do it something, you don't want to call it a webinar. Let's just put it that way. You want it to be really like focused on education. So class is great. Masterclass is great. Something that encourages new users to come and join us, get your questions answered. You can do this invite only that your customer success or sales team is saying, why don't you pop into this private thing. We've limited the classes to 10 people. It's every week, whatever. You could have something like an office hours where it's just you go live at a certain time every single week and anyone can pop in. I think what you're doing is probably the best option, which is you have these consistent weekly meetings and then you're pulling out all of the information that's great. You're cutting it together and you're also putting it on your website and in your knowledge base as supplemental education. There's a lot of people are different learners. There's a lot of personality types out there. And for most SaaS companies, they're going to have a very niche audience. They're going to have an audience that has a very similar persona. They're going to think and act and talk and work very similarly. So you really want to spend time thinking about how are customers talking to me and how are they reaching out to me and what are they requesting? If your customer base is primarily requesting phone calls, that means that they're going to be heavily engaged in something like live video sessions or even just video content that you can put out as, you know, your documentation as part of your knowledge base. If people are more looking to you through email, then you need to make sure that you're really putting a lot of, you know, annotated screenshots in your knowledge base articles and that maybe you link to that in some of the videos that you do to push people back into that knowledge base. So all of this knowledge should be cyclical. I think also having office hours, consistent times is really, really good for sales. People want to be comfortable with the companies that they're buying from. And again, when we talk about like acquiring those long-term customers, we want to make sure that they feel from the get-go that if they have a question, no matter what medium they want to contact us through, we're responsive, we're being proactive, we're giving them those channels in advance. And also, it doesn't take as much energy as a lot of people think. I think someone would say like a weekly video live, that's like a ton to put out there, but it's really not, especially if you're averaging 5 to 10 people and you've got the questions in advance and you just want to be human and casual and upfront with them. Nobody expects something to be completely overproduced, and it shows more than anything intent and excitement and enthusiasm for your customers.
What we do during our sessions, we actually invite both existing customers and prospects and like everyone really who talked to us. This does also a few other things, like our prospects and leads actually, and you know, people that trial our product, they get to hear all the great things that our existing yes. customers talk about and how excitingly they say, oh, you can really do this. I'm so happy about that.
Yeah. And the other thing to remember too is like when you think about how people are using a product, when they're signing up to use a product or they're going to be a new customer, they have in their head a scenario, a problem that you need to solve from them. And sometimes they don't have the language to explain what that problem is or what I need it for. It's the reason why feature requests are valuable, valuable, valuable. We should be soliciting them constantly all the time because it's not just that, oh, I want a menu here. It's why do you need the menu there? What kind of muscle memory are you mimicking? What product are you used to using that's like that? And what did that product do for you? Those things are very important for us to, as product people, as product builders, start drilling down. So when a new customer or prospect customer is in the same room as a trainer and a person who's been with the product for a year, who's still very enthusiastic about it, they're going to hear language that's going to say, that's the problem I've been having. Just like you're saying, like they're doing exactly what I need to do. And again, they sometimes don't know until they get in there and actually use the product. So having other people or other customers create case studies or doing customer interviews that are live, they're video, where people can kind of consume it and see themselves in that other customer, also incredibly, incredibly valuable from a customer experience standpoint.
Now going from a founder doing the support to someone else doing the support, do you have any process or recommendations how to hire a support person?
I do. And it all has to do with making sure that someone wants to do support. Because as you know, as SaaS people, we're really good at hiring junior developers who want to get into product one day. And we're really, really good at hiring like our cousin's son who's got a degree, but he's like not sure what he wants to do, like have them do support. You know, we wouldn't do that with any other aspect of our company. I would never turn over my marketing campaigns or my drip campaigns to someone who I knew wasn't enthusiastic about it and wasn't going to be around in 6 months. I wouldn't do that. I think it's valuable for everybody in your company to have experience in your inbox, understanding customers. I think that's definitely a consistent thing that people should do, but I don't like it being used as a stepping stone. And as founders, we need to get away from that habit because we're doing ourselves a disservice. We're doing the entire customer experience community a huge disservice as well. So tips for hiring great support people, go to a community like mine, like Elevate CX. Again, thousands of people are in there. We have an awesome jobs board. Most of our members are in management level, but they know tons of ICs or tons of people who are in that like support lead that you know, are great hires. Think about hiring someone part-time if you feel like you can't support a full-time support lead. That's okay too. Think about, you know, what your expectations are from this role and be really explicit in that when you're doing your job. It's not just, you know, interfacing one-on-one with their customers. It's like that kind of thing is like, obviously, right? You need somebody who's going to set a tone, who's going to be proactive, who's going to be, you know, thrive on educating customers, who's going to be comfortable explaining technical complex details to people who might not be technical complex people. Having job ads where you ask for writing samples is a big one. If you have a product that's out to market that people can research already or find information about, put in your job description or your ad for a support person in your cover letter, answer this question that a customer has sent in and give some sort of like, you know, example of something that you've seen in the inbox. See how the person actually researches, finds the information, sees if it's in your documentation, downloads the demo to figure it out themselves. That kind of stuff is what's going to give you an amazing support employee. You've got to invest in finding the right person. Just as you have to invest in the process yourself of creating the documentation and creating the role, you've really got to invest in who you're hiring. So that's going to be my number one thing. I think on top of that is look to other companies that are doing amazing support that you love. Maybe you've engaged with their support folks or whoever it is. And lean on communities like yours, like communities out there, like the MicroConf community, and find those people and say, how did you hire these people? How did you find them? Search for job boards for customer experience and customer support pros and try to mimic the language of companies that you really admire, because those are going to draw in the right kind of candidates. Yeah, I could go on about hiring for support people like over and over and over, but I would just say the number one thing is look for someone who's going to be in that role and thrive in that role long term. Stop with this hiring an intern, hiring, you know, your cousin's best friend's college roommate's daughter. Stop with it, because those people churn out. Employee churn is very expensive. And when it comes to building a fantastic customer experience, consistency is really, really key.
Can you share with us any additional numbers? For example, I was really interested to hear that I think that you mentioned the number 10% of all mm-hmm. customers going to use, submit a ticket or something like that.
Well, that's the goal. I think that's a benchmark for a lot of companies. They just sort of say, that's our goal, right? But when it comes to customer experience KPIs, they're all over the place, right? And for SaaS companies, it's going to be very different than a legacy brand or a utility company or something like that. If I were Comcast, my benchmark is probably going to be 60% of my customers are going to contact support at one time in their life, right? So having a way to say, okay, well, this is what we expect, this is what we want, then you can say, okay, maybe we're hitting 20% of that. You only know how much you're hitting if you're actually doing reporting and you're actually running those metrics. So some of the key KPIs, if you want to call that, or those metrics that you want to be looking for from your customer experience standpoint, is time to first touch. Now, that's not resolution time. I think resolution time is iffy. You know, it's not prescriptive. Every product's different. Every customer base is different. So it's really hard to say your resolution time should be X. But your first touch time is very, very important. I think across the board, everyone knows that first response they get from someone in customer experience sets the tone for all other experiences you have. And it also is an opportunity for customers to be, wow, you know, this is great. This is a great response. Tips and tricks along that line, if you are struggling with response time, I know your autoresponder does not count, although your autoresponder should include links to your knowledge base, right? Give people expectations. On your contact form, if you can, keep a running ticker that says our average time to response is 6 hours. This is our business hours. This is when we are responding to emails. Give customers great, like, actual explicit expectations for when they're contacting you so that you can beat those expectations and really wow them. Another great one to think about too is, what is your back and forth touch time? Because that is going to give you two different types of statistics. One, it's going to tell you, is the person who's answering this giving good information that is like closing the ticket and, you know, farming people off to the knowledge base and to our videos, and like they're giving the answer that we don't need to help them anymore. That's a great statistic to keep track of because it tells you a lot about your knowledge, if it's useful, and the people who are actually answering emails, if they're useful, right? The other one too is it's giving you huge insight to who your customers are, because you might have those yes and customers who are just back and forth, constantly back and forth, asking questions. You might have customers who email you every single week, every single month. It's really important to know this because you've got to change how you offer them support. If your entire customer base is contacting you more than 3 times a year each, that means that you're not serving them well with what you're putting out there. Or like I said before, when we talk about personality typing and who our customers are and what our customer base is, we should already know that based on how we market to our customers. We should already know who our niche audience is. So we should think further about how they want to learn and how they want to be contacted. Whether is it calls, is it office hours, is it emails, like whatever that is. So those are things to really look at. First touch. And then those back and forths, any help desk is going to tell you average numbers in a thread, just like Gmail used to. Very, very important to look at. You're going to think about categorizing all of your emails and tagging all of your emails. So that's the third thing to really look at, is like, where is the breakdown of why people contact us? If the breakdown is billing issues, more by and large, including refunds and cancellations, than anything else, huge problem, right? If the breakdown is this feature isn't working for me and there's funky and it actually went into your product team and they had to fix something, another huge issue. If most of your questions that you're getting from customers are covered in documentation and you see that on a little pie chart, that's actually sometimes a pretty good thing, but it does mean that you need to make that education a lot more prominent for more people so that it's a little bit more searchable. So think about those things as far as like statistical stuff. Any product person will tell you, like, they want to use your customer experience, your customer support emails and chats as like data mining, and you can, but there's no reason tracking things if you don't do anything with what you track, right? There's no reason in reports and metrics if you're not going to do anything with it. So don't think you need to just follow the guidelines of KPIs of what everyone else is doing. Think about what it really matters to your team and to product development. What are we looking to build? What do we want to build? Who's our audience? What matters to us? I think that's the most important thing.
Tagging your emails, the tickets, is so important and so valuable. We actually were not doing this up until recently. And so, I know, right? And just for us to be able to understand what kind of tickets are most, people ask about, I actually went back like probably 3 to 4 months and manually tagged all the emails so that when we're able to run the report and say, okay, we had 30% of all requests about billing, 30% about onboarding, and then 20% technical issues. Do you have any other categories, how you categorize things?
Yes, I think you can get granular on this crazy, right? Any data nerd will go crazy granular on, is it a billing issue, does it cancel, is it, you know, all that kind of stuff. I tend to think that the most valuable stuff for small growth stage SaaS companies, right? Less than 5,000 customers for sure. I think the stuff that you want to look at is the features they're requesting, the features that they're asking about, the features that they're requesting, and what you know you're building, cross-referencing those. So this is a time when, you know, you can actually start to get granular in a less messy fashion by not just tagging it feature request, but by tagging it specific feature request. Have that as the tag, right? Let's say you've built a project management application that doesn't have dates on to-dos, and hundreds and hundreds of people ask you every single day in email why you don't have dates on to-dos. There's no due date for something that's due, right? You would make that the actual tag, to-do dates feature request. So later on, when you have way more customers and you've built way more features, it's not going to get like shuffled around in just this feature request bucket, right? Think about as a product builder, maybe you've got something, a feature set that's going to be in release in the next 6 to 8 months. Somebody's emailing you saying, gee, I could really use X. And you can say, great, we're building that right now. What you also get to do is tag all those emails and pull them all up in 6 to 8 months when the beta release is out and contact all those people and say, this is coming out for release, or we just released this feature. That kind of proactive usage of categorizing is going to go a long way for customers who are like, geez, you listened to me. You built the thing I needed you to build, right? Like, as a customer, that's brilliant to have that kind of insight to, you know, this product that's being built that I'm using. And if I wasn't able to sign up with you because you didn't have that feature, well, take my money. Here it is. How great is that? There's a lot more that you can do just with the insights that you're getting from that if you're taking the time to organize. It's really all it comes down to. But you can be really, really agile with the reasons that you're tracking those reports and those tags and what you do with that information later on. I know from like a developer standpoint, it's important for them to know if there's a bug after this release, or how many people reported it, or what's happening, or is this working? You know, we're being finicky about it. And I think those things are still important too. Giving your product people and your devs a monthly rundown of, this is how many tickets came in total. This is how many were about this. This is how many were about the thing you built. That stuff's important. It goes a long way for also re-engaging our dev teams and our product teams with what customer support is seeing, because customer support is frontline. You know, very rarely do we give our devs and product people the opportunity to hear firsthand in a customer's own language what they think about a feature or what they think about, you know, something that's being added or taken away. So very, very valuable insights come from just tags. It's such a silly little thing, but it's like so powerful, right?
You've mentioned customers with high volume of support tickets, and we are definitely struggling with something like this. So we have two packages.
Yeah.
We have one package is like regular clients, and then we also have enterprise. So enterprise, yeah, we get lots and lots of requests, and this is really, yeah, killing us. Do,
yeah,
you have any recommendations, or I don't even know where to start with it.
I know. Well,
you kind of want to set the expectations right with them,
yes,
right? But you don't want to put it down.
Yeah. So my recommendation is always have a paid support tier. Make people pay for it. If they're doing that, as you guys are doing that because it's an inclusion in your enterprise software. So, you know, sorry, it's not going to work. You can't charge them anymore. I'm sorry. But this is, again, getting back into, I know there's a lot of people who are watching this who never probably put in their minds that customer support people think about personality typing and audience personas, but we do because we see these people all the time. I remember one time when I was working customer support at a software company, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I had one customer who I did the math once, and on average, he wrote me 2.5 emails every day for a year. Every single one of those emails ended with, please advise. And I hate him to this day. Every time I think about him, every time I tell this story, he drives me nuts. However, the type of personality that he was, the type of customer he was, is he thrived in education and he thrived in being told, you're doing right, you're doing great, this is exactly how you should use it, or this and what. Those types of people are the ones that you really want to cater to with documentation, education, videos, all that stuff that we talked about earlier. Have something set aside for them to have special time with you. I don't think it's a bad thing if you're getting this a lot of emails from the same person, telling them like, hey, it'd be so easy if you like included all of your questions in one email so that we can go through them together all at once versus a lot of this back and forth, right? Or if you're getting, you know, you get 3 emails from the same person in a week, to just say, hey, do you want to hop on a call? Remember the company that I talked about a little bit ago, when I first started using them, I was like, I had no idea what I was doing. It was a huge undertaking for me, and I'm not a very technical person. I'm installing stuff and it's code. And after the second email or so, the guy who wrote me back just included in the email, here's a Zoom link. I'm going to be on for the next 30 minutes if you want to join me and walk through this stuff. And I was like, my brain exploded at how great that support was, thinking about all of the people that's like incredibly useful for, just an open invitation and here I am and click on this link in 30 minutes and we'll chat through it. I know those kinds of things sound tedious. And if you're still doing support by yourself, you're just like sinking into your chair, like, oh my God, one more thing. But they work and they help. And they, again, empowered those customers to feel like they're really being seen and heard and helped, and that this product isn't hard and they can figure it out and things are going to be okay. Right now, we have to remember too, just like tensions are high in the world. The sensitivities and angst is very high in the world. And you might find that people are projecting some of that anxiety and that angst into their interactions with you. So the best thing that you can do is, you know, give them the space to ask questions in any way that they need to, and find areas where you can, you know, be a little bit more one-on-one with them if they need that. I think onboarding classes and those video calls and office hours is a way of the future. It's not going to be something that we can decide that we don't want to do. It's something that we're going to have to be a lot more consistent at collectively, just to give people those space, you know, and tone down some of that neediness from a lot of people.
I wanted to follow up on a great example that you gave. So can you elaborate a little bit more? After someone completes a trial, then the automatic email is being sent.
Oh, yeah.
There is something like, I'm going to be online on Zoom for the next 30 minutes.
Oh, what I got, it wasn't even a trial. That was a support email. I was actually asking him, how do I do a thing? And I was having trouble. It wasn't even a trial. It was actually like working with the support person. And he just said, I'm going to be in Zoom and click this link if you want to join me. Incredibly powerful to know that we have resources like that to just listen. We know who this person is. We see their name in the inbox. You see what company they're from. This is going to be trouble. Or it's just going to require a lot of handholding. So show them that you recognize that and that you're here to support them. A lot of people think that give them an inch, they'll take a mile. That we wanted to hop on Zoom. We're still in control of setting those boundaries and saying, like, look, I can't do this every single day, but like, why don't we schedule something? And I'm happy to answer your questions. That really helps, I think, to tone people down and to kind of pull them back a little bit. I don't think that if you just give people these open doors, they're just going to be inundating you with emails. I mean, they're already doing that, right? So you need to find areas where they feel like a little bit more empowered and a little bit more catered to, especially when they're in those like higher dollar amounts per month or per year. With enterprise software, it's certainly like that. They expect concierge service. So, you know, it's something that there's a lot of ways to offer beyond just emailing back and forth with people. And sometimes it's phone calls or Zooms or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
I love that example. I'm taking a note of that. On Monday, our new support is starting, so I'm going to have a few notes for him.
Hey, let me know if I need to pop on and give him a pep talk.
You mentioned about the enterprise plan, and I have a follow-up question to that. So we do sell an enterprise plan, and there are some additional customizations included, but there's a limited hours that we can allocate to every customer that is on the enterprise plan. So what's happening right now is we do not set those expectations right. And so customers think that they are on the enterprise plan. They are paying $500 a month. And so they are entitled to every single, you know, thing that they want to be done for us to do that. How do you set those expectations right? So that you do provide, you know, I don't know, 3 hours a month, maybe support, not like 20 hours.
I mean, look at my face. I'm like, expectation setting and lack of expectations is a huge thing that I coach people through all the time. I told you before, I was working with this company, you know, I'm working on audits. And that's one of those things, is that the founder of this company believes that, you know, she has very explicit expectations for everybody who works from her, but maybe her employees don't know what those are, right? So that's just like from a customer experience standpoint. I'm building a customer experience team. I need to be explicit. Values, mission statement, SLA, put it in writing. We would do that for our employees. We need to do it for our customers as well. I'm also really big into the idea of boundary setting when it comes to customer support, because if you don't have explicit boundaries that are documented in a really gentle way, your customers think that you owe them your attention because of the money that they're spending. And that's not really how the relationship should work. A long-term healthy relationship between a founder, a product, and a customer really all has to do with everybody getting out of it the same amount, right? You pay me money, I give you education, you use the product, it works for you, we're all happy. But if you are just like drowning in the same types of customers who are taking advantage of that relationship, a lot of the times it's your fault. So when you go into any concierge support or enterprise support level, you have an opportunity to have a service level agreement with them where you can really cut out any of the terms and service junk and just be human with people. Like, we recognize that at the beginning, you're going to need a lot more time for us. That's why we've built this amazing documentation resource. We ask that you check it first. We have priority support for you if you need to get through on email. If we feel like you need a little bit more of that handholding, then we'll put together a one-on-one training group for you and your team. Put those things out there as just a contract between you and the customer in a really friendly human way. The one thing that it does is remind the customer that these resources are here, that they don't have to rage click the support chat bot in the lower right-hand corner because they're scared. It empowers them to seek out education. It says, we're here for you, but this is easy. You're going to be able to do it. You know, we're going to show you how. If you don't have those resources for them, again, I feel like I said this 40 times in this, if you don't have resources for customers to educate themselves, they're only going to be very, very needy customers who are constantly asking you for help. So when I talked about the contact form, I talked about setting up business hours. If you can do it, if you have a technical way to do it, to display your average touch time on things like that, those really help quell that panic and that angst for customers, especially repeat customers who are looking for help. If they see that they can get a quick answer, great. One of the things that I love is saying things like, 90% of the emails that we get are answered in our documentation. Why don't you give it a search? And saying things like that to psychologically pump people up that, hey, maybe I don't need a person, right? Getting back into knowing your audience and knowing who that niche audience is and who you're selling to, you really need to be aware of how they like to learn and be aware of how, you know, what resources they're consuming. If you find that no one's using your documentation, maybe they don't know what's there. Or maybe they think it's not going to answer a question. You need to prove that to them, right? I also really like when a lot of companies in their onboarding material, they point to educational stuff. So it's not just like, use this cool feature, but, you know, look at this case study. It's like, hey, there's knowledge here for you. There's knowledge here for you to consume and learn from. I think one of the things that we fail at a lot when it comes to acquiring customers is that we're very technical with them off the bat. And we have these terms of service and these SLAs and this, you know, contractual stuff. And there's not a lot of humanity there. And the humanity is what's going to drive people to trust you. And it's what's going to drive them to be friendly and patient with you if you're friendly and patient with them, right? So yeah, it's really hard. As much as I love concierge level support, I love like companies that do, they call it like, you know, customer success managers or something like that, which is like kind of like an old school account manager who's checking in on you. I think it goes a long way for a lot of technical products, you know, for people to just have that touch point. But if a customer is super frustrated and abusing that touch point and they're not learning how to use your product and they're not respecting those boundaries that you've set up for them, either you don't have expectations set for the customer and explicit boundaries set for them, or you just need to fire them as a customer. I don't know. That's what I think. I don't know.
Any other questions that I didn't ask you but should have? Anything else you want to share? I feel like this has been such a productive conversation. We discussed so many things. I want to give a floor to you so that you can share anything else that you think people need to know.
Yeah, I think the only thing that we didn't really get a chance to cover, I kind of touched on, is just like the state of customer experience and customer facing roles right now is really precarious. And it's something to remember if you're doing support and you're feeling stressed out and if you're feeling the tension and if you feel like you've seen an increase in angry, rageful customers, you're not wrong. It's true. I run a customer experience community, again, thousands of people. We see this as a huge conversation piece right now is, how do we prevent burnout from, you know, our customer support agents? How do we psychologically handle the rage that we're feeling from customers, the tension that they're projecting on us, the anger that we're projecting? I think as a founder, it's even harder because there's so much of your soul built into this thing that you've created, that you're selling, that you're engaging people. And there's so much of your heart and your spirit into that. And so when you have an interaction with a customer that's hostile or tense or that you feel like they're unhappy, even over minor stuff, it really can start to chink the armor a little bit. So I would say if you're doing support, I just want to like validate your feelings right now. The state of the world is overflowing into all of our interactions that we're having with other human beings. And it's true and it's real and it's hard. But I also want to remind you, you know, why you're doing support in the first place and why you started a company and why you're selling stuff to other people in the first place. That's to help them work better and to make them more efficient. And it's not just about a paycheck. The paycheck's great, right? We all know that like being the master of our domain is awesome. That's why we would became founders. But at the end of the day, we want to be useful people in this society. We want to build things that people love and we want to build things that change their life. That's why we're here. So it's just something to kind of think in the back of your mind when you're building out your customer experience and you're encountering that hostility maybe, or you're encountering something that just kind of tanks your spirit for the rest of the day. That's okay. You can take it. Be the person who kind of takes the hit and let someone, you know, project a little, but then do something good and remind them like, we're here to help you and we're here to make you happy with this product. Let's work on that together. I think it's a really weird place to be in right now where customer experience people are those like very frontline on customer facing roles. You're really taking a lot of hits and it's very hard. And that's the other reason why it's really, really, really important you engage with your community. This community is phenomenal. There's a couple more that we love and we talk about. If you're looking for help on the CX, you know, realm of things, come to our community, come to me, let me know how I can help you, because there's, you know, being a founder of a company, especially a SaaS company, is so rewarding and it's so awesome to build something useful, to build something that people love. But it's even better to have like a really great human connection, loyalty from your customers, and to be able to do something that makes them happy, even if it's something as simple as a feature request that gets implemented. So just empowering everybody, validating everybody. Thank you so much for letting me be here. And again, if there's anything else, just ask me questions. I'm a pretty open book when it comes to this.
Awesome. Thank you. Now, Sarah actually has a book called The Customer Support Handbook. It is
I wrote this book in 2014. It's still very, very, very relevant, but a little bit outdated because of the world that we're in right now. Version 2 is on its way. The next one's called Support for Support, Customer Support Handbook, Volume 2 should be out very, very shortly. But yeah, thank you for plugging it. It's still very useful.
Woohoo! So when are you planning to launch it?
I don't know. Hopefully within the next, yes. It's definitely a 2020 situation. If anything, it's obviously going to be like maybe an ebook pre-sale, but it'll be on Amazon. Hopefully, just cross your fingers for me. It's been a weird year.
Sounds good. Awesome. Do let us know when it's done. And now I will share that with the community, because I was going to say that your first book has not had any reviews recently. So I'm like, everyone go buy the book, leave a review there. But you know what? Hold your reviews, hold buying the book until the next one is, huh?
Yeah. I mean, oddly enough, that book still, it just churns. I can't believe people are still buying it. Like, I get hundreds of purchases on that every month and it's crazy to me, but that just goes to show that people are really craving information and education on this topic. So it's a super informative guide. The whole half of it is just full with question answers just like this. So I really hope that it can at least be useful to some of you out there.
Awesome. Sarah, thank you so much. This has been fun.
Yeah. Anytime you want to have me back, I'm happy to help.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself? Because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side, this is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluniva.com/team. natalieluniva.com/team.